restaurant chains like Ruby Tuesday, Applebee's, and Chili's are trying not to go to the casual dining graveyard. On Monday, Ruby Tuesday announced that it would be bought by a private equity firm after four straight years of declining sales. Ruby Tuesday isn't the only chain that's struggling. Brands across the sit-down casual dining industry are all facing sales slumps and hundreds of restaurant closures. But there was this heyday for these restaurants, and we're going to talk about the then and now with Elizabeth Dunn. She covers food and drink. Her stories appear in publications including The Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Businessweek. Her recent article for Eater is called As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, your descriptions are so vivid. I feel like I'm sitting inside TGI Fridays with my appetizers in front of me. I'm remembering the early 90s when I'd be going out with friends. And of course, we would go to Applebee's. It was just where we went. And we would all pluck down our $10 bill after the meal and look at see who else is in the restaurant. This was so 90s. You know, you described the crispy at the edge, oozing with cheddar and studded with glistening little nubs of bacon. How does that depiction represent the kind of restaurant you consider?
Sure. I mean, I grew up having the exact same experience that you describe. And I think people all over the United States can remember a time when TGI Fridays or Chili's were, you know, someplace that you went a lot and everybody, friends from all across the income spectrum would meet and have a meal. You know, it was definitely the most popular place to go when I was in high school. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write a story about the decline, because it seemed to me like, you know, the kind of place that held a lot of nostalgia for me. And I was curious to look into why those types of places weren't attracting crowds in the same way.
So what's been going on? What has been the, you know, the reason for such a pretty rapid decline of these sit-down casual restaurants?
Yeah, so the decline has been happening for them for about a decade. Just before the financial collapse in 2008, these restaurants started to see their traffic numbers turn negative, and they really stayed persistently negative, you know, since then. But in the past couple of years, things have gotten a lot worse. And I think it's the last time I checked, every single month traffic had declined in that sector since 2015. So it's really not a lot of bright spots on the horizon. And there are a lot of reasons why that might be the case. I mean, the restaurant industry is a complicated place, but there are two different aspects that I looked at in my story. And one is just to look at America overall and how incomes and wealth are shifting. And the other is changes, technology-based changes in how we spend our time.
What are those technology changes? I assume you're talking about our smartphones guiding us through our day and night.
Right. Right, you are. So, you know, traffic at these chains, and I should say, so casual dining refers specifically to chain restaurants where there's waiter service. And so the meals are really, even though a lot of them offer delivery now, the meals are really designed to be eaten in. Their core offering and what makes them different from a kind of a counter service restaurant is that you eat in. So what happened around a decade ago, besides casual dining chains seeing their traffic turn negative? Well, the iPhone came out in 2007, and Netflix started its streaming service in 2007. And that seems like more than a coincidence that we gained these new options for how to spend our leisure time, in addition to going out to eat and sitting in a pleather booth with your friends. You could now sit on the couch and text or go on Facebook or Snapchat or watch Game of Thrones or whatever you wanted to do. You now had a really compelling additional option that didn't include sitting at Chili's.
It seems there's been a whole lot of finger pointing going on at the millennial generation for the demise, decline of these restaurants. What about millennials?
Yeah, millennials, marketing people, and I guess businesses in general love to blame millennials for they're failing fortunes. I think, you know, you often hear about CEOs of casual dining restaurants and actually all kinds of businesses saying, well, millennials, you know, our millennials' tastes are different. Millennials want X, Y, and Z that we can't provide. So a lot of casual dining chains are saying, well, millennials are looking for authenticity, and that's driving them towards independent businesses, you know, small farm-to-table restaurants, and that millennials are looking for convenience, and so they don't want to have to sit down for a meal. And there's a lot of kind of contradictory claims going on with what millennials are looking for. And, you know, it's not to say that millennials might not be part of the equation, but I just think it's maybe bigger than just, you know, what one specific demographic is looking for in their meals.
And these chain restaurants, they're so highly marketed. I just keep thinking of some of the different promotions over the years, the 2 for $20 with appetizers. And right now, Applebee's has got dollar margaritas for October. Well, you know, they've come almost infamous for promotions. And you read about the deals that are pegged to different days of the week. We also saw a parody of promos in the 1999 movie Office Space. Let's take a listen as Jennifer Aniston's character gets a talking to from her manager about the buttons on her suspenders.
We need to talk. Do you know what this is about?
My flair?
Yeah. Or your lack of flair, because I'm counting and I only see 15 pieces. Let me ask you a question, Joanna. What do you think of a person who only does the bare minimum?
A lot of people thought that was funny because we've seen the buttons and the promotions, the endless apps. Why do so many of these chain sit-down restaurants lean into what you call a sort of death spiral of discounts and specials?
Well, one reaction to the lack of business and to the I guess decline in traffic has been to try to discount. And the idea there is, well, if people aren't coming because they feel these places like Applebee's and TGI Fridays, check averages are about $14, $13, $14. So that's what a meal costs on average at one of those restaurants. And if that's just becoming too expensive for people, well, maybe if we can provide a deeper value, or, you know, we can cut the cost, people will come more frequently. And so that's the general idea. You get them in the door with a $1 margarita, and possibly they'll have a good experience. They'll come back again. You can drive more traffic. It hasn't really seemed to work all that well, considering that traffic is continuing to fall. Not the best business strategy long term.
We're talking about chain restaurants, sit-down chain restaurants, with Elizabeth Dunn. She covers food and drink. Her stories appear in publications including the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Businessweek. Her recent article for Eater is called As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. What is your favorite memory from a sit-down chain restaurant? 800-642-1234. Do you remember the Howard Johnsons? How about ordering a bloomin' onion? Tell us your story. Do you prefer local dining to the chain restaurant? Why is that, or why not? Or does something about the decor or the menu options, the predictability, keep you coming back to sit-down chains? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elizabeth, you set your article in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, this kind of like middle-sized city, and you also kind of pick apart what has happened to chain restaurants in this type of city, representing cities perhaps across the United States with their economies. What is going on in the middle-class economy?
Right. So the reason I went to Lancaster is, I, rather than just looking at numbers, I wanted to kind of see what how the changes in restaurant choices had panned out in one particular city. And I chose Lancaster because if you look at Pew Research Center data, it kind of represents, you know, what you might call a typical American city. It's got a lot of aspects that are just common to metropolitan areas across the U.S. So that's why I chose Lancaster. But what I saw there was you had, so for people who aren't familiar with Lancaster, there's Lancaster County, which has, it's very agricultural. It's famous for the Amish population. But then there's Lancaster City, which is a small city. It has got a beautiful downtown, which for decades was really kind of abandoned as people moved to the suburbs. And that was the setting in which TGI Fridays and a lot of other restaurants like it opened in the late 80s and early 90s. And so they were opening in kind of malls, which is certainly where I went to TGI Fridays when I was growing up. But in the past decade, Lancaster City has had this huge revival with, you know, with a lot of money going into the city, going into the downtown, and a lot of kind of small farm-to-table independent restaurants popping up, and which pose a pretty obvious alternative to Fridays. And that's what you might notice first if you go to Lancaster, is that there are all of these great-looking little coffee shops and bistros and wood-fired pizza restaurants. Where you can choose to eat for more than you would spend at TGI Fridays. But they're a choice that wasn't there 10 years ago.
But you also called out the eroding middle class, that in this day and age, middle class Americans can't afford sit-down casual dining anymore.
Yeah, so then what might not be quite as obvious when you first arrive in Lancaster is that for all those people who have maybe, you know, moved up the income ladder and are earning more, there's an even larger proportion of the population that was earning less on an inflation-adjusted basis. You had more people in Lancaster were finding themselves, you know, having fallen on hard times. So what that means is those people maybe aren't able to spend $14 on a meal, or if they can, they're not able to do it as often. And so you also saw a lot of fast casual and fast food restaurants all around Lancaster. So Taco Bell to Panera to Chipotle. And those are places where you can get a meal for, you know, in some cases, $4 or $5 and up to $11. And so those are providing an option for people who just really don't feel as economically secure as they did 10 years ago.
A number of factors are contributing to the sit-down chain restaurant demise. Fast casual chains, as Elizabeth mentioned, like Chipotle and Panera are on the rise. People are gravitating toward independent restaurants and locally grown fare. And there are simply too many restaurants open in the U.S. Some analysts are concerned that America is, quote, over-retailed and over-restauranted, if you will. We're discussing this with Elizabeth Dunn. She writes about food and drink for publications like the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Businessweek. Her recent article for Eater is called As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. Join in. What's your favorite memory from a chain restaurant? Do you remember the Howard Johnson's? Tell us your story. Do you prefer local mom-and-pop dining to the chain restaurants? If you work at a sit-down chain restaurant, have you seen your customer base decline? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back, maybe hear from you, right after this break. The CEO of Buffalo Wild Wings, Sally Smith, wrote a letter to her shareholders earlier this year. Quote, millennial customers are more attracted than their elders to cooking at home, ordering delivery from restaurants, and eating quickly in fast casual or quick serve restaurants. Smith is stepping down as CEO at the end of the year. It comes after a long battle with her investors over the chain's declining sales and its business strategy. We're comparing the past and present of sit-down chain restaurants with food writer Elizabeth Dunn. Her most recent piece in Eater is As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. What about you? When was the last time you ate at a sit-down chain restaurant? Do you recall why you chose to go there? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Paul in Waukegan. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I used to be a frequent customer of several chain restaurants and several non-chain restaurants, both myself, you know, just by myself reading a book, and with my family or group of friends, and we've almost entirely stopped that, and it's strictly because of the ambiance. The restaurants seem to have decided that they all have to play music loudly, usually from a speaker right over the table, and if I'm reading my book, I can't concentrate because of the noise. If I have my friends and family there, we can't have a conversation because we're drowned out by the noise. And I think they're being driven by marketing. Max and Irma's I used to go to told us that the corporation required them to play it at a certain decibel level, and they weren't allowed to turn it down. I think a lot of this is being driven by marketing, and I think it's misguided because I think it probably irritates more people than it entices to come to their restaurants.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, what's interesting about that is if you look at within the casual dining segment, what restaurants have managed to do well, continue to do well, one of the strategies that has worked for places like Texas Roadhouse and Dave and Buster's is providing an experience that is about more than just the food. The idea is if you give people some entertainment, that'll maybe make them want to come back. And so it seems to me like maybe what those restaurants are doing that you're noticing is trying to kind of hop on that bandwagon and figure out, well, you know, if maybe if we don't really want to invest in high quality food. Well, that's another good question. Have you found the food quality to be you know, the same over time, or gotten worse or gotten better?
Well, I would say that in the case of every restaurant that my family and I have quit going to, the food was excellent. We loved the food. We even liked the decor, but we found the experience due to the sound levels to be off-putting to downright irritating. And in a couple of restaurants that weren't too busy, I would actually walk around while we're waiting for the meal and just introduce myself to other tables and say, excuse me, folks, I hate to intrude, but I wonder if you would tell me if they turn the music down here, would you complain? And they would say, well, we haven't complained, but we wish they would.
You're trying to get others on your side. Ambiance.
Well, I thought that not getting them on my side, but just wondering if they were in the same boat as I
was.
And it turned out they didn't like it, but they hadn't actually complained about it.
Well, Elizabeth, a lot of these restaurants, too, have done major remodeling to try to just reinvent themselves. How has that worked?
Right, that's definitely true. So TGI Fridays has a concept restaurant that they have rolled out. I think they've just done one, but it's much more kind of neutral tones and kind of modern looking. And I know that Applebee's has really invested in technology, putting kiosks at all of their tables. So I don't think they've so much changed the look of their dining room as much as adding in technology. You know, it doesn't seem to have really made a dent so far, but the other issue is a lot of these restaurants are franchised, and so it's a big investment for a franchise owner to remodel a store. And if they're not totally sure that the traffic is going to be there, I think they're hesitant to do it.
Paul, thanks for the call. I guess earplugs is the way to go there. Let's go to Casey in Milwaukee. Hi, Casey. Go ahead, Casey. I don't hear a Casey there. Let's go to Barbara in Eau Claire. Hi, Barbara.
I was saying I remember going to Howard Johnson's, and we always had ethnic food, American food. I grew up in a European background in a candy business, and my brother used to say you could see the change in American culture with the candy business. But with that said, I think you're seeing a rise in ethnic restaurants. I think a lot of people are eating out today. I heard in Atlanta, there's so many Indian restaurants going up, it's phenomenal. And then you've got the Hmong restaurants in Eau Claire and Thai food. And aside from that, also in Eau Claire, Applebee's is at the mall. And there's been a big decline in the mall. And as those businesses go out, people don't eat there as much. So I think it gets to location and changing culture and all kinds of stuff, because people are saying, my friends are saying, everybody's going out to eat around here.
Elizabeth.
So the mall point is a really interesting one. It's true that that a lot of these stores are at malls, and restaurants are at malls, and malls have been, you know, not attracting the types of crowds that they used to, and that has a big knock-on effect for the food options there. And you know, and America's tastes are changing in terms of cuisine, but I will say that a lot of the casual dining restaurants have really tried to capture that in their menus. If you go to Applebee's, you'll see that there is a huge, like almost to their downfall, a huge range of different types of food. You've got Asian food, you have Tex-Mex, you have just sort of your classic steaks and burgers. So I think they've tried to jump on that bandwagon. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear, you know, from callers how they feel about how well that's worked, whether they like those big menus where you can try a little of everything, or whether it's maybe, you know, better to have something that's a little bit more focused.
But Chili contracted in a big way, diminishing its menu last month by 40%. What's going on there?
Yeah, so that is definitely a reaction to this feeling that it's the people get overwhelmed when they see 100+ items on a menu. The menus have gotten just very convoluted, I think. A lot of different, we talked about the different kind of discounts and specials, and it can feel like doing complicated math to figure out how to put together your meal sometimes looking at one of the menus. So Chili's, I think, is reacting to that, and also just the operational advantages of turning out fewer dishes in your kitchen. So maybe you can do each dish a little bit better if you're not trying to provide quite so many options.
Barbara, thanks for the call. Let's go to Casey now in Milwaukee. Hi, Casey.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I am, I guess, an older millennial. I'm 29, and I don't think that this demise could come fast enough. I personally have always hated these casual dining restaurants like TGI Fridays and Applebee's and what have you. I think that, I guess, I agree that, like, millennials kind of have a different expectation when they go out to eat. And I've always wanted, like, a more local, like, a more farm-to-table kind of experience where you can definitely tell the difference in quality of the food. And I think that is the biggest downfall of these casual dining restaurants. You go, I mean, I have to give a disclaimer. I keep kosher now, so none of this actually applies anymore for me. But I have many years in my adolescence and early adulthood where I went out to these kinds of places, and these casual dining restaurants, in my opinion, have very poor quality food. It's that mass-produced, like, super high sodium, like, I don't know. It's just, I think it's a quality issue, and I think, like one of your previous callers was saying about the ambiance, I think what these casual dining restaurants are trying to do is attract a younger crowd, and I think that's a huge mistake. I think they need to be trying to target an older crowd, the people who have nostalgia for those types of restaurants,
yeah,
and maybe play different kinds of music based on that instead of, like, playing this, like, young, I don't know, kind of urban music. I just don't think it appeals to anybody who's actually going to the restaurant.
Elizabeth, sounds like these restaurants are in a tough spot.
Yeah, and the point about food quality is definitely one that I hear made a lot when I've told friends, you know, and family I was working on this story. That was the reaction that I heard a lot is, oh, you know, good riddance. And, you know, the food just isn't that great. Some restaurants have heard that and responded. Olive Garden is a good example of a restaurant that was not doing that well. I don't know. I guess probably, Casey, you haven't been to Olive Garden probably. I don't think they're kosher. But if you have been, I'd be curious to hear what you thought, because Olive Garden has really turned things around. And the way that they did that was by investing in their food quality. Is they really just stepped it up a notch and started producing dishes that customers seem to think were much higher quality. But this, the trade-off to farm-to-table restaurants is real. It's definitely happening. But the issue is that they're often, not always, but very often, more expensive than casual dining. So Casey, I don't know, do you go out less in order to go to better restaurants, or how do you make that work?
Well, I'm very limited in where I can go now, now that I keep kosher, but before, in my previous life, I would definitely try to hit up not necessarily more expensive restaurants, but like just more authentic. So like you were saying before about menu size, that is like the biggest red flag to me. When I see a menu that's too big, I'm like, no way, because if a restaurant is overcompensating by having 100 items on their menu, it means they don't do anything particularly well. So if I'm going to go out for Asian food, I want to go to like a Thai restaurant where like the people making the food are Thai and it's authentically Thai. And, you know, same thing with like a Mexican place. Like I want authentic Mexican food. I don't want to go to a restaurant that has Thai food and Mexican food and every other kind of food on the menu, because then it means none of it's authentic.
Yeah, Elizabeth, sounds like Casey's saying do what you do best and just focus on that.
Yeah, interestingly, though, so earlier, I think it was last year, Applebee's decided to really invest in, they did a big kitchen remodel, and they decided to invest in doing hand-cut steaks. And the idea was, let's double down on kind of American, high-quality American food, offer these premium, I think they were USDA choice steaks. And they did, I think they had their worst, I want to say they had their worst quarter ever after that rolled out, because people just weren't responding to the higher food quality. So I don't know. They are in a tough spot. They're being challenged, as you mentioned earlier. We have so many more restaurant options now than we did 10 or 15 years ago. So there isn't a lot of, people are not tolerating mediocrity.
Casey, thanks so much for those observations. Anne from Madison says she prefers a counter service restaurant when she eats alone. She wonders about food trucks, food carts. She says they're a good local option in a casual environment.
Yeah, that's definitely, food trucks have been a huge trend for the past 10 years, although I don't know what you guys are seeing in Wisconsin, but in New York, it's kind of, it's tailed off a little bit as chefs and potential food truck owners have realized that it's a little bit more complicated to offer those choices. But I think the conversation here is really around wanting to support small business authenticity. And when casual dining restaurants initially kind of rose to prominence, one of the reasons that they were really appealing to people is actually because they were a reliable alternative to local restaurants, which probably sounds funny to us today, but you know, it was someplace that you could go if you were, you know, traveling, or even if you weren't traveling, and you would know that the food quality, you were going to get the same thing every time. The food quality was going to be reasonable, the food was going to be safe. And so that's clearly a sign of just a changing tastes in America, that we're looking for something different now than we were 20, 30 years ago.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with food and drink writer Elizabeth Dunn. Her stories appear in publications including the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Business Week. We're talking about the rise and fall of sit-down chain restaurants as they go to the wayside, as people look for other options, as perhaps middle class shrinks and can't afford sit-down chain restaurants. Her recent piece in Eater is As the Middle Class Goes, So Goes TGI Fridays. Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you remember frequenting a neighborhood Applebee's or the Chili's in your town? Are those restaurants still there? 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Buck now in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Buck.
Morning. You know, it's like everybody else is saying, it's food quality. And I'll be 50 this year, so that, you know, it dates me. But back in the 90s, we ran from restaurant to restaurant, drank beer, and ate munchies. And what happens is, you see their food quality, everything is frozen. It comes out. Some of it's not cooked all the way through. They're serving you warm tap beer in glasses with dirty beer lines. And, you know, they kind of treat us like we're college kids. And no offense meant to college kids. You know, they're a little less choosy and they're out to have a good time. But when you start spending that kind of money for a burger and fries and you're tipping a waiter or waitress and you're getting just substandard food quality, you got to stop and ask yourself, is this really a good value? And then that's when you start looking at going to a non-chain restaurant and going, well, I might as well spend $5 more than that terrible hamburger and get myself a ribeye or something, you know?
Buck, thanks so much for calling in. And I want to pick apart the whole tipping thing, because Mary in Milwaukee called and she says she doesn't go to these restaurants because she doesn't like tipping. And she also says that the meals for kids, or parents bring kids when they're screaming and squirrely, it's distracting. But on the line of tipping, how much of an impact is that here as we've seen the fall of these restaurants?
That's a good question. That's not something that's ever really addressed in certainly by the casual dining establishment or really by others looking at it. I think I've looked at tipping separately, because the phenomenon is that tipping is sort of, I guess, on its way out. People are not wanting to tip anymore. And, you know, I don't know. It's a good question. I'd be interested to hear from callers about whether they don't like tipping just because it moves the whole price of the meal up, or whether they don't like the idea of tipping, you know, whether they'd rather just pay more for their meal and not have to worry about putting a separate tip line on the receipt. But, you know, it's certainly a benefit to a place like, I don't know, Five Guys or Panera, that you don't have to worry about that part of the equation.
That people can just take their food from over the counter and be done with it, and then just bust their own table when they go out the door. One thing I want to ask you, as I was reading your piece, Elizabeth, it occurred to me that when I'm in an airport, the Chili's is quite busy, and I'm wondering about that phenomenon, because, you know, it is, you know, in the concourses now, a Chili's restaurant will be quite busy as people wait for their flight. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's an example of just having very few options and a captive audience. So if you've got hundreds of people waiting for delayed flights and a limited number of restaurants, I think a lot of people are going to find themselves going to the first bar they can find. And so it's a great opportunity for restaurants located in terminals, I think, because, you know, you don't have, so what Buck was describing about feeling like, you know, the quality isn't great and there are other better options. Well, when you're in an airport, the options are whatever the options are, right? So you're going to either have the burger or you're going to have nothing.
Let's go to Ashley in Evansville. Hi, Ashley.
Hello. So I had 2 points. I was thinking about what's different for me as someone in my 30s now versus someone in their 30s 20 years ago, and I'm wondering if what we're spending our money on has changed, and that's affecting this, because I was thinking right now we're spending our money on our smartphone plans and our smartphones and our apps, you know, Netflix and Spotify and all of that, and also with kind of a paradigm shift with we're not having kids as early. You know, instead of taking our families out to dinner, maybe some of us who haven't settled down yet are spending more money on, you know, travel and things like that. So I'm wondering if that might contribute to we're not spending our money at these kind of restaurants.
Elizabeth.
Well, the data actually shows that people are spending more money than ever eating out. And part of that is driven by just the rising labor costs and rising real estate costs that make meals more expensive. But I think that people are still, it seems that people are still going out. There's also some great data from the NPD group. They've been tracking over time the percentage of meals that people source from home, meaning, you know, that you get ingredients at a grocery store and make something at home, versus the percentage of meals that people eat out. And that has really hovered around 80% home, 20% out for like decades. And so it seems like people are still, you know, people are still going out and spending money. They're just doing it at different places.
Ashley, thanks for calling. TGI Fridays is testing margarita delivery in its Houston and Dallas markets before rolling it out nationwide next year. Chili's cut 40% of its menu items last month, as we said earlier, and Applebee's is going all in on a $1 margarita promotion through this month called Dollarita. sit-down chains are doing all they can to get people through their doors. We're exploring why they've gone by the wayside with Elizabeth Dunn. She's a food and drink writer. Her stories appear in publications including the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Businessweek. Her recent article for Eater is As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. What's your favorite memory from a chain restaurant? Do you work at one of these sit-down chain restaurants? What have you seen in your customer base? Join in, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment. When you look at the nation as a whole, sales at fast casual restaurants like Chipotle, Panera, Noodles & Company, that sector grew 550% between 1999 and 2014. And this fast casual market is expected to continue growing by at least 10% per year between now and 2020. That was a market study from about a year ago. We're looking at the struggles of the sit-down chain restaurants, how we remember them back then in the 90s with Elizabeth Dunn. She's a food and drink writer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you prefer local dining to the chain restaurant, or does something about the decor or the menu options, perhaps the predictability, keep you coming back to chain restaurants? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Jeff in Brookfield. Hi, Jeff.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead, Jeff.
Hey. I think just listening to your show here that I think the social media has changed everything. I think when people travel now, they can have at a fingertip what's the, you know, they get great reviews on things. And before, they had to sort of stick with what they knew. It was too hard to find out if a local place was worth it or not. They didn't want to roll the dice.
There's like a Yelp factor.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, what do you think of that?
Yeah, that definitely comes back to that idea of when you think about the atmosphere in which chain restaurants emerged, it was in a situation where people didn't want to take a risk on a local place. And that has certainly changed since the internet, you know, since everybody had the web on their smartphones. So I think that is a big factor in helping people, you know, find some place that is either high quality or higher quality or cheaper or both, or, you know, that gives them, I think there's much more focus now when you travel on getting a taste of something local rather than getting something that would be available in your own hometown.
Jeff, thanks for that comment. Let's go to Frankie, who's driving from North Carolina. Hi, Frankie.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
I'm listening to everything. Like I said, I'm coming through Wisconsin now and had you on the radio. But, you know, it's the biggest thing for me is, like, the noise. I travel all over the U.S. working. And, you know, you go to places and it's the noise. I was down in Texas, and you walk in there. I mean, it's a well-known restaurant, big, big restaurant. Walk in. You walk in, it's, you know, lines long. You go in there, you're like, oh, this is good food. Everybody's real courteous. But you get in there, you can't hear the conversation. It goes back to what the one caller was talking about. And, you know, I'm 29 years old, and, you know, it's like, I don't fit in. With, I guess, this new crowd, I came from a small town, you know, 200 people, and we were raised in, you know, home-cooked meals and stuff like that. And then everything that other people are saying, you know, the big menus and stuff like that. You know, I live in Minnesota now, and I prefer to go to just some, you know, mom-and-pop's place, go in there, and it's just simple.
Elizabeth.
I'd be curious to hear, you know, the places that you're going instead. Are you still sitting down somewhere, or do you tend to really just, you know, want to kind of grab and go or have something even delivered?
No, I prefer, you know, because of over the road, I prefer to sit down and just relax and just have a good time, eat. You know, we're on the road 24/7. And when I'm back home, like I'm heading home now, you know, I prefer when I get home, you know, either my wife cooks or she says, you know, I don't feel like cooking. And I say, hey, you know, let's there's a place called Mom's Cafe. You know, we go right there. Simple, you know, and the place is always packed. You know, and yeah, it's an elder crowd. You know, we're probably the youngest people there, but you know, I feel more intact with that generation than
Frankie. You know, do they know your name? Do they recognize you?
Oh no, no.
Okay.
I go there all the time. You know, you know, I walk in, it's like I'm a new guy. You know.
Okay.
it's all about just simplifying things. I mean, everything's so big in the world. You know, just if they just try to keep stuff simple, go back, you know, everything's moving so fast in the world. So,
well, Frankie, safe travels. Elizabeth, keeping it simple, is there something to that?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about what Frankie just said about, you know, everything being so complicated and preferring this local and authentic feel. And I think that chains are going to be hard pressed to compete with people who are looking for that, because I just don't know how a big multinational chain, I guess, creates that vibe in their stores. But you also have, in addition to that, I mean, you do have the rise of places like Chick-fil-A, which are doing an enormous business, and their chains. And so, you know, it's not that everybody is looking to get to just independent mom and pops. I mean, chains still do seem to have a lot of appeal to people. It's just a different kind of chain.
Let's go to Pam now in Gladstone, Michigan. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I noticed that nobody has brought this up so far this hour, but with the rise of vegetarianism and veganism in the country going on right now, the reason why I have stopped going to these kind of restaurants is because basically there are no options for me. When I was vegetarian, I could say, hey, hold the cheese, but everything has meat. The last time I went to an Applebee's, and I have to confess it's been a couple years, because there's no reason for me to go back because there's really nothing I can eat there.
And has that meant that you are dining out less in general, or do you feel that that's a particular problem with casual dining?
It's a particular problem with casual dining. Other restaurants I go to, I have the option to say, hey, can you hold something? But these places, it's basically, or substitute something. Some places have beans that I can eat. But I just was so disappointed. Like the last time I went to a Chili's, you know, they just, I had such a hard time finding anything at all.
That's interesting. I did notice when I was going into TGI Fridays for this story that there were a lot of gluten-free options. That's something that I definitely picked up on, but I didn't really notice that there are, I guess, very few vegetarian options, which would certainly, I think there is a real trend towards plant-based eating, you know, or eating vegetarian before 6 p.m. or whatever it is. And so I think that's something that they really do need to address to be successful.
Well, Pam, thanks so much for that comment. Gary from Iron River says these restaurants were unique and somewhat special when they first opened. They are no longer unique or special. Elizabeth, TGI Fridays goes back to 1965. What do we know about that, their history?
Well, TGI Fridays actually started as a singles bar in New York City, right in Midtown. And at the time, singles bars were a new idea, places that women could go with their friends unaccompanied by a male date were, you know, that wasn't what bars tended to be like in the mid-60s. I think people who have watched Mad Men will all recall that the bars were not very women-friendly atmospheres. So it was shortly licensed and then franchised to become not just a bar, but really more of a restaurant focused on not only singles, but also families. And really, the massive expansion started in the 80s and then throughout the 90s, which is a time when, you know, Applebee's also started up. There were just a number of chains. So I think one of the factors that these restaurants are suffering from is just saturation. I mean, there are just thousands of them in the U.S., and so maybe there are just simply too many.
So when you look in your crystal ball, what happens next to a TGI Fridays, to an Applebee's? They've cut hundreds of locations, Applebee's in particular, last month, over 100 locations. What does the future hold here for this real estate?
Well, I don't think the category is going to just disappear overnight. I think there is still a time and a place for a chain sit-down restaurant, but I think, you know, some brands, we've already seen a lot of bankruptcies, as we just saw the Ruby Tuesday's sale. And I think some concepts will survive and others might go by the wayside, or they might have to just really, really seriously reinvent themselves. I think, as I said, Olive Garden is in a pretty good position right now. Cheesecake Factory, which is a little bit more expensive, has done a great job. They're still very popular. Texas Roadhouse, Outback Steakhouse is doing okay. So there are individual brands that have really managed to continue to attract customers. As for TGI Fridays in particular, I couldn't say. I'm very curious to continue to watch and see how they evolve and whether they're able to kind of provide an offering that starts resonating with people again.
And as we wrap up here, what are some of those other brands that have been able to hold their own, have been able to hold their investor shares and keep you know, people in the door? What have they done differently?
Well, I think, you know, food quality is a big part of it. That's come up a lot in this conversation. So the brands have realized that it really, if you're competing with local restaurants that are cooking things fresh, you have to do a little bit more. I think also updating decor. So Texas Roadhouse tends to feel a little bit more contemporary than the others. Texas Roadhouse also, I've mainly heard positive things. It seems like the callers have not loved loud music, but they do kind of loud country music. Their servers line dance, so that's very exciting. You know, these places are, what they're providing is a guaranteed experience for people who go there. So if you're gonna put your dollars, if you're gonna send your dollars their way, they want you to know that you are gonna have a great night and not worry about you getting the, you know, the half-cooked hors d'oeuvres or half-cooked appetizers and the you know, the warm beer.
Well, Elizabeth, I'm wondering, after writing this article, has it changed your mind about where you eat?
I think it has made me realize the worth of places like this, in the sense that they really were places where you could get together with people who were all across the income spectrum, and it was a sort of a common touch point for people in a town. And I think it is, you know, the food might not be food that I would choose on a daily basis anymore, but I do think that we need these places where we can all sit down together and gather and kind of share the same experiences instead of becoming increasingly polarized.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Elizabeth Dunn is a writer who covers food and drink. Her stories appear in publications including The Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg Businessweek. Her recent article for Eater is called As Goes the Middle Class, So Goes TGI Fridays. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Naija Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And this is the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening, by the way, to The Morning Show.